Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Oh! Let him play!
I agree.
Their second best player is Nervis Solarte. I mean, come on.
Solarte.
They are...
Never nervous. City is dead. The stadium is dead. And then an hour later, I'm horned. Yankee Magic. I'm running through walls.
As we always say, you know, the board is the board.
It's the truth.
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Locks of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for the big golf show. Good to have you with us from the Dave in the City studios in sunny Southern California. Not too bad out there right now, but it has been a hot week here in the city and throughout the Southland. So we hope that if you are living here in California or anywhere else, that you're staying cool. So while we do that, we'll talk about the action that heated up in Carnoustie in Scotland during the Open Championship, a championship round in which Tiger Woods had a little moment in the sun. He was in the lead for a brief couple holes or so, but it was something to see. I wasn't ready for it to happen again. And you look at the board, oh, he's, you know, minus six, tied with a bunch of people. And then as he heads to the ninth hole, minus seven. And he seemed to be in the driver's seat until the 11th hole, where a crucial mistake trying to come out of the fescue cost him. I thought he could have just hit it on the green way to the left. It would have been a fair distance from the hole, but could have made up the distance with a putter. He had been putting pretty well up until that point. From that moment on, things fell apart. But this is not just about Tiger Woods, although certainly he got a lot of people going. I noticed a lot of buzz on Twitter, and even I was like, man, this is pretty intense. Like, he was actually going to... He looked like he might have actually done it. But I did also think, like, you know, once he makes that mistake, it's all going to come apart. And unfortunately, that seemed to be the case. Other guys in the field that were a big story. Jordan Spieth making a great run. Justin Rose making a great run. Rory McIlroy with the eagle earlier in his round to really make things interesting. But at the end of all of it, it wasn't Tiger, it wasn't Rory, it wasn't Spieth, it wasn't Rose, it wasn't Ricky Fowler like everybody was talking about before the tournament started. It was Francesco Molinari, who was playing with Tiger in the final round, and he pretty much snuck up under everybody and won the thing. But a good job out of him. He is the champion of the Open here in Scotland, and for the rest of us, we'll break it down. So let's get our crew back on the program. Definitely a lot of juice, a lot of things to talk about in this one. I mean, it looked kind of boring for about two rounds when you had Kevin Kisner and Zach Johnson tied for 2 days straight. And then finally started to see some competition. And we ended up with some good juice. And I think my friend Mike might have had a heart attack for a moment as Tiger was very close. That's as close as we've seen him. They said since 2012. It, you know, in terms of winning a major, you know, that's a long time ago. So let's talk some golf. So let's first bring Mike on our show. Mike, how's it going tonight?
Pretty good, Dave. And I think you are correct. sorry. Sorry, I got a little bit of a cough going.
Oh, I got you. I got you.
If things had gone a certain way on Sunday, you might have been starting off the program wishing me best in my recovery from a stroke as I was recovering in the hospital. Because I think that would have been a very realistic possibility. I did get a tweet from our friend Vinny in New Jersey, or V-Tread, saying thoughts and prayers with you on this tough day. But luckily, right when he sent that was right when Tiger Woods fell apart. So I'm doing pretty good, though, otherwise. A crisis was averted this weekend.
Well, yeah. That would have definitely turned some heads if he had finished the deal. So, anyway, let's get John on. John, how's it going tonight?
Doing well, Dave. Certainly a lot to discuss from this tournament. Probably one of the most exciting they went from one of the most exciting final rounds like you could ever have, and then it just was a complete dud for the last 20 minutes. I guess we'll get into that, but definitely an interesting tournament, and glad to be back with you guys to break it all down.
Yeah, I think Carnoustie lived up to the hype. It was pretty generous in the I think they said it was in the third round. It was pretty generous. It wasn't quite as Carnasty as it had been known to be. But Sunday still had some tricks up its sleeve. And even in the early rounds, it was knocking people out. And a good example is Dustin Johnson. Like, he was wiped out pretty early because of the burn and among other scenarios. So, guys have to be good at their short game, and they have to know their putter in order to succeed in this kind of a tournament. And that's basically what happened for the people at the top. And so, well, let's talk about Molinari, although I don't remember much about him. I'll be honest, I was so excited about Tiger and Rory and Jordan and everybody else that was doing it. And then just while all that was happening, Molinari was just knocking down, I don't know, he was just doing what he had to do to win. I just don't remember, I don't remember a single shot that he made, but I'm sure he did. I'm not going to dispute his championship, but it just gives you an idea just how much chaos there was on Sunday. Even the rounds before, it really had a lot of juice. So let's go back to Mike. Let's talk about the finish. I mean, normally we just talk about the winner in this part of the program, but really, I mean, the winner was actually the sidebar compared to everybody else. Don't you think, Mike?
Well, absolutely. When you get a tournament like this where you had at times all on the back nine, you had Tiger Woods in the lead, you had Jordan Spieth in the lead, and you had Rory McIlroy in the lead. You know, I know we haven't talked about it so much in, like, the recent years because, yeah, Tiger Woods has been out for a while, but I know years ago we'd always talk about it, like, man, could you imagine if we got, like, Tiger Woods versus McIlroy down the stretch going in a major, just how big that would be? And, you know, we kind of got it a little bit here. But, and I made this comment on Twitter. This tournament, if one of those three guys had won, it would have gone down like as an all-time one of the greatest majors ever. Because, you know, when you look generally at the greatest majors ever, that's kind of a criteria for them, this like clash of superstars on the biggest stage. That's why a lot of people think the 1960 U.S. Open was the greatest major ever, because you had Arnold Palmer charging from behind to catch Ben Hogan and a Jack Nicklaus as an amateur, you know, to win his only U.S. Open. So it's like, you know, how do you top something like that? So if one of those three guys had won, because, you know, we all know what Tiger is, and we all know that, you know, McIlroy and Spieth both could say, you know, I'm done with golf tomorrow, and they're Hall of Famers, they're all-time great. So, in that sense, it was a little bit of a disappointment. But the thing is, you know, yeah, it was a dud, but to me, and I said this on Twitter too, the idea that Francesco Molinari would win this tournament, to me, going in, I thought it was a very realistic possibility. On the final day, I thought it was a very realistic possibility. So, you know, when it happened, I was like, yeah, you know, this isn't a surprising result. I mean, the guy now in his last seven tournaments has three wins and like three second place finishes. So, you know, it's a bit weird. He's not a young man. I think he's around 40 years old. I might be wrong about that. I probably should have done a little research, but, you know, sue me. But the guy had always been known as a solid ball striker, but really he's taken his game to just a whole nother level. I was looking him up before, and I think he had four wins around the world going into this year, and he's got three in the last 2 months. So, yeah, it's just a case where a guy who's undoubtedly the hottest player in the world right now comes in, you know, to a tournament, and, you know, Carnoustie, and we'll get to this later, what a course it is. I mean, really, just even in, you know, no win 3 of the 4 days, but it held up beautifully to the modern game. So, a great test there. But he comes into Carnoustie, and he goes toe-to-toe with Tiger Woods. And, you know, for all the nonsense that you have to hear about, oh, Tiger Woods, he intimidates all his players. People get up to the tee, and their knees start shaking, and they just wilt in his presence. No, they don't. I mean, that was such a nonsense narrative that you heard for years. You know, the fact is, Tiger Woods, at his best, was better than everyone else in every area of the game. That's why people were intimidated. It's like, well, If I can't hit it as long as him, if I can't hit it as straight as him, if I can't hit my irons as high as he can, as accurately as he can, if I can't putt as well, and if my short game's not as good, how am I going to beat him? It wasn't like, oh my God, it's Tiger. But getting back on point, yeah, the guy didn't have a bogey over his last 37 holes. And I was looking this up. He had one bogey on the front nine the whole week, which is just incredible for a course, you know, where you can get into trouble pretty easily. And the other thing, too, is on 12 and 13, that was the key to his round. On 12, he had like 5 feet left for par, 5-6 feet, makes the putt. Then on 13, he hits a bad tee shot on the par three over the green, and it like goes over a mound, and it's kind of like, there's like a, not really a swell, but like the green is raised up, so it goes down. There's a runoff area, and then it goes into the rough. So he's on a downslope in the rough, and he manages to get up and down for par. And that was really the key there, because then he birdies 14, which, you know, you had to do. I mean, 14 was really a par 4.5, so you had to birdie that hole. And then, you know, unfortunately, 18, where he just sticks it, took the drama out. But great job by him. But, yeah, you know, it is a bit unfortunate that you had those three generational players all in the mix on the back nine, but none of them could get it done.
Yeah, that it would have been, like you said, it would have really added to the excitement of this tournament if one of them won. So, that's too, you know, I would say too bad, but, you know, that's being a little unfair to Francesco as well. So let's go to John and get your thoughts about this finish. I mean, it was quite a finish, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you had one stage of the tournament. I mean, you had, what, six or seven guys at 5 or 6 under, and you thought this could be just a huge playoff, which would have been pretty crazy to see. And, you know, I made the joke that Molinari was going for the David Sims and Tin Cup round with the 14 pars, of 18 pars, rather, that ends up, you know, he ends up losing the U.S. Open in the hypothetical, you know, in the movie to Peter Jacobson. But, you know, of course, Molinari breaks the streak with the birdie on 14 and then obviously closes it out on 18 and just completely takes away all the drama, as no one else really could catch him at that point. I know Schauffele was kind of behind him with still half a chance, but everyone else had finished, and it was just, you kind of knew at that point once he birdied 18, it was pretty much over with. But yeah, I mean, he's definitely the hottest player in the world coming into this event. I mean, he completely dominated the Quicken Loans event last month. I mean, he was clearly the best player there, you know, but he, you know, give him credit, he won by like 8 shots. It was just a really great performance. He won the BMW championship and on the European Tour in Wentworth, I want to say about a month and a half ago as well. It's similar to the Players Championship here in the U.S. It's like their crown jewel of the European Tour. And then instead of playing at the Scottish Open last week, it was crazy. He plays at the John Deere Classic, and he didn't win because Michael Kim just went absolutely insane, like 27 under or something. But he finished second there, so he's coming in extremely hot and just played steady golf, as Mike mentioned. I mean, no bogeys on this course in the last, what, 30-something holes? I mean, that's just truly impressive. He's always been known as one of the best, you know, pure ball strikers in the world, and then now his short game scrambling and putting has finally caught up to that, and you can see what happens when he put all of it together. He's just playing tremendous golf, was not fazed at all by the Tiger circus. That's what you can't say for, I don't think, you know, people are intimidated. I completely agree with Mike that, you know, I feel like they're shaking in their boots when they play with Tiger, but there's definitely something to be like being in his group. Even this year and on the regular tour stops, no one that's really played with Tiger has done well, just because there's just so much motion and there's a whole circus about it. But Molinari just completely, you know, head down, shut all that out, and got the job done with the 16 pars and 2 birdies, and you know, takes home the title. So tremendous job by him, and certainly, you know, give him all the credit in the world for winning his first major. And now, who knows? I mean, we could talk about his long-term career prospects. I mean, and, you know, if he plays like keeps playing like this, he can win more majors. But you got to figure this is like a once-in-a-lifetime kind of 2-month stretch of golf. You know, not to say he's not going to be a factor on leaderboards going forward, but we don't, you know, I wouldn't look at him as like a generational talent like some of these other guys. But certainly a world-class player at the moment. So I guess those are the initial thoughts on Molinari's win. We can dive into some of these other contenders as we go on here.
Yeah, I think that's a good call, John. I mean, these other contenders certainly were a big part of the story. And I got to give a lot of props to all these guys. I mean, Spieth was making a run. I was just as mesmerized as you were, Mike, with the Rory McIlroy eagle. I mean, that single-handedly put him back in it, and it was a really good putt. I mean, that putt was crazy. It had a little bend to it, and it got going. Let's see, anything else? No, I'm gonna leave it to you to break down the rest. I mean, there's a lot to talk about. So yeah, let's talk about those other contenders near the top, Mike.
All right, I guess I'll get into what cost the other contenders. I mean, McIlroy, he was up and down on Sunday. He made a couple bogeys early, but credit to him, he fought back a little bit. He seems to be trying to adjust his attitude. You know, and you know, you start to gain a little bit of a different perspective on life because, you know, McIlroy is basically same age as John and I, so... you know, once you start to get near 30, I just think you have a bit different of an outlook, and maybe he's adjusting to that. You know, he's focused more on not necessarily the result, but you know, just the stuff he can control. But still, though, we got to be a little bit surprised that, you know, he wins those two majors in a row, and now we're sitting here 4 years later, and he hasn't won another major, which is very surprising. But he's making some positive strides. But what really cost him was on Saturday, what did he shoot, a 70 or 71, when the scoring conditions were very easy. I mean, he should have put him, he should have been a few strokes better easily, and then he would have been in position to win this tournament. So, yeah, I know the guys in front of him imploded, and he got to the point where he was tied for the lead, but even though he was tied for the lead, yeah, he made the eagle on 14, but then you have those last four holes, and you can't expect anything out of them. They did a good job to, you know, get up and down on 16 and 17, and then 18, you know. It's kind of the story of where his game is right now. He takes out a three-wood, and it's playing downwind. He hits a three-wood 400 freaking yards, which is just insane. But then, you know, from 110, he leaves the wedge out to, like, 15, 20 feet, which... for a pro is not a very good shot. And then, you know, the putt is just left the whole way. So that's kind of a good summary of where his game is right now. Brilliant off the tee, but just erratic with those approaches, and the putting's got to be better. Jordan Spieth, you know, I read an article by Alan Shipnick for golf.com, and he got into Spieth's warm-up before the round, and apparently it was just atrocious. It wasn't going well, and actually was bad enough to, at the point where he's 10 minutes before his tee time, and he hasn't even taken out a driver yet. And, yeah, he couldn't get anything going. He was wild on six, the first par five. He just, for whatever reason, instead of, he hits a drive to the right, and instead of just trying to put himself back in play and relying on his strong wedge game, he pulls out the three wood, hits it into a gorse bush, and he makes pretty much finishes him. He didn't make a birdie the whole round. He was just clearly off. He didn't putt very well. he didn't do anything well. So just really a Sunday where he didn't have it. And you know, it's like for what Jordan Spieth has done, we almost expect at some point where, you know, even if he's not going well, it's like, well, he'll find the gear, but he never did. So. It happens. Justin Rose is going on a Friday to 18, and he's one off the cut line, and he makes birdie, and he then damn near wins the thing with just a, you know, great performance on Sunday, but a little bit too far back. And I guess we got to talk about Kisner and Schauffele, because, I mean, these guys were just like deer in the headlights on Sunday. I mean, they're not. Yeah, I mean, they both shot 40 on the front nine. What are they doing? And then, you know, Schauffele got it back a little bit, but on 17, he just hit. I know 17 is a very tough hole. It's one that is never going to give itself up to modern technology because you can only take so much club off the tee because of the burn. So you got to lay back. But, I mean, look, he's got a 2-iron coming in. That's a tough shot. But, I mean, he just fans it out to the right, and that finished him. So would have been interesting there. Let's see, anyone else? Nah, I guess that kind of does it for the contenders. I mean, there were a lot of other people in the mix. Like, there was Alex Noren was around there. Kevin Schaffel, who at one point hit one of the worst shots I had ever seen coming down the stretch. You know, it's just like, I don't know what the hell was going on with him. Like, it was just like, it looked like something you would see if you go to, like, the course on the weekend. Like, it's just, he got so quick through his transition and he basically shanked the shot. So it was like, what the hell was that? But, yeah, he hasn't really been in this position before. So, but it just seemed, you know, Sunday was a tough day. So people were falling off. But I guess that does it for my summary of the contenders going into Sunday.
Okay. John, let's give it to you for an additional summary, your summary of the other contenders.
I assume we're going to be talking about Tiger separately, right, Dave? Is he got his own section?
We guess we should spend a little more time on it, because I have some thoughts of my own. So, yeah, let's go with the, quote, okay, other guys first.
Okay. Yeah, you know, Mike mentioned a lot of them there. Let's give a shout-out to Eddie Pepperell from England, who he thought there for a little while, if conditions kind of stayed windy, that he could post his score 5-under and maybe get into a playoff. The interesting thing about him is he completely hung over playing that round on Sunday when he shot 67. So I guess the old saying, you know, like, beware of the sick golfer, it's beware of the hungover golfer as well. So he finished at 5-under and gets into the top six, which was pretty amazing. Yeah, Rose just completely, like, you know, if you follow the like the fantasy golf kind of thing, whatever, so many people had Justin Rose in all these, like, you know, fantasy sport contests, and he makes that putt over the weekend, and I didn't have him in anything. So I said, of course, he's going to make that putt, and he's going to shoot, like, 6 or 7 under and get it in the top 10 just to screw me over. And, of course, that's exactly what happened. He damn near wins the tournament. I mean, I really didn't think he had and not one point did I think, oh, man, he's going to win, because, like, at best, 6 under was going to be a playoff, but pretty impressive to get himself back in position to even have a chance after he had played so poorly for the first 35 holes. And then, you know, he makes the birdie on 18 on Friday. And then it's just kind of one of those deals. He's like one of the first guys off on Saturday morning and just can kind of play with no pressure and shoots himself back into the tournament. So another high finish from him, and, you know, definitely continues his great play this year. Yeah, Schauffele and Kisner. I think our friend Andy in Seattle said if there was a bet on Kisner, like, you know, crapping his pants, basically, he would have bet all of his money on it, and that's exactly what happened. This is the second major now in a row where he kind of, going back to the 2017 PGA where he had the lead, but he just did not have it on Sunday. And at one point on the front nine, every shot they were showing from Xander Schauffele was, like, going left and right, and I was like, oh, my God, please, NBC, stop showing this guy. It's painful to watch. And then he did kind of find it a little bit into hanging there on the back nine, and then that, you know, that 17th hole just killed him. But that was a nice little moment with the crying baby there on the 17th. Showed he had a little humor even in the heat of the moment there. I guess we can talk about a little bit of the course afterwards. But I was, you know, shocked that a lot of these guys were laying back so far in some of these holes to have, like, 240 yards in into a fifth wind, which is just crazy to me. I get it on 17 because they don't want to go into the burn, but on some of these holes, like the 12th hole, I mean, they're hitting 240 yards into the wind. How you, like, even, you know, I could not make a par from that. Just as a professional golfer, it's tough to make a par with that shot. I just didn't understand some of that, but I mean, maybe we can get into a little more of that after. Interesting about Jordan Spieth, after the round, like, he was very, very candid with his comments. He was like, I'm not talking about this at all. Like, you know, I'm not going to win every time I go out. He had a very interesting perspective on the entire round. Like, he was legit, like, happy of what he just done. I mean, I guess he'd been struggling pretty much all year, and he hasn't had, you know, many great finishes. So I guess, you know, having the lead after three rounds is, you know, was definitely a positive trend compared to what he had been doing. But, like, if he just shoots even par, he wins the tournament. And, I mean, we definitely think he's capable of shooting even par at this course. So it's just kind of odd that, you know, he should be happy for finishing the top 10, but at the same time, like, he easily could have won this tournament. So I was just kind of surprised with that take that, you know, that he was talking about after the round. A couple other guys here, I guess. Tommy Fleetwood, another good major finish. Although he was kind of disappointing on Sunday on the front nine. He played holes 5 through 7 and 4 over, If he just plays those at even par, he's right there at the end. But again, definitely a guy to watch out for in these majors. I think he's going to break through at some point here, just like Molinari did this week. See anyone else here? Yeah, no one really else to mention. I guess a Tony Finau with another top 10. He's becoming like the younger version of Matt Kuchar, who also finished in the top 10. Just kind of sneaks his way up there, in the top 10 or 15 every week. He's like ninth in the FedEx Cup standings, and he hasn't won a tournament, which is pretty crazy. So just shows you how consistent he is. But at the same time, he's not good enough to break through and win these tournaments. So, I guess that pretty much covers everyone in the top 10. I did have Rory, actually, by the way, in our fantasy golf. So I was rooting for him to win it. And, you know, it just – even after he made the eagle, it was just – you were just hoping for pars at that point. But those last four holes are so tough. I guess he could have birdied 18, but – you know, I think all we could have hoped for was a big playoff for him and a lot of these guys. And Molinari, as we discussed, was just so solid that he wasn't going to allow that to happen.
Yep. Good. That's a pretty good analysis, John. I mean, you really covered a lot there. I do want to talk about the course as well, but certainly the feline in the room we must address, Tiger Woods. I mean, this is definitely a very different tournament. Normally he's way out of it by the time they make the cuts, but here he was doing pretty well. He played good. He played a good round. I mean, he had a pretty good tournament overall. He tanked in the back nine, but it was interesting. It was definitely very exciting to me. I mean, that plus all the other guys making the run. And Mike, you essentially called it because you said that he could make a run at the Open Championship and he might win one there. And this definitely lined up for it because these holes, it seemed like people were hitting irons off the tee almost the entire way. Like maybe some three woods, but not a ton of times did you see the driver in use. And so I noticed that would probably favor Tiger Woods because he barely uses the driver anymore. And so things were going pretty well for him for the most part. His short game was pretty on point for much of that tournament. It was interesting. My question to myself, and I'll give it to you guys too, is there going to be another chance for Tiger Woods in one of these majors? And I would presume that the next one's probably going to be another Open Championship because it just seems to lend itself to guys late in their career. But I don't know. I mean, it's hard to tell. I mean, that definitely was a first for me. I mean, it was the first time I've seen that in a really long time. So I'll give it to you and see if this could be repeated or whether this is just right place, right time, and everything lined up and he blew his chance. I mean, what do you think about the whole Tiger scenario?
I guess if he keeps his health, he can keep it up because – you know, his swing speed, his distance, everything, you know, it's still there. It's not gone at all. So, but, you know, the thing is, though, who knows? I mean, the guy's had, what, three back, like the two microdiscectomies, whatever they're called, and then the spinal fusion. So, I mean, look, who knows how long that's going to hold out? That would be my big, you know, be careful about this. And the guy's 42 years old. So, you know, realistically, he probably only has a couple more years of a window. And I know people keep saying, oh, he can win majors up to 50. No, not really. I mean, yeah, we know Nicklaus won when he was 46, but that was really just catching lightning in a bottle over those last 10 holes there at Augusta. And, you know, he hadn't won a major for 6 years before that. If you want to go to some other guys, you know, Ben Hogan, he won three majors in 1953, which would have made him, he was born in 1912, but it was in August. So he would have been 40 years old. And he contended pretty regularly after that to like 1956. So, you know, and Vijay Singh in his early 40s won a lot. Yeah, we see guys in their early 40s do well, but, you know, once you start to get in the mid-40s, it starts to go. And the other thing, too, with him is, and we saw this play out on Sunday, ever since Y.E. Yang beat him,
his nerves are not what they were. I mean, if you go back to the last time he had the lead in a major that late, which would have been the 2011 Masters, like the same thing kind of happened. He had this really great front nine. And then I'm thinking, you know, in 2011, that's when Rory had the big lead and then he imploded and Charles Schwartzel ended up winning. And then he like missed a really short putt on 9 or 10. And then it all came unraveled. You know, you just see this with him now is he gets himself into contention and it's not the same anymore. So, now look, I've seen all this crap written. It's like, oh, well, this performance shows that, you know, he's going to win a major. That doesn't mean he's going to win a major. It's very, very different to win one of these than to get close in one of them. And, you know, you're exactly right about the conditions. I know Brandel Chambly decided to pick him to win, you know, and just trying to get himself some name recognition there by doing that. But when I saw the course, how baked out it was at first, you know, you had to figure, man, guys are going to be hitting a lot of irons off the tee. And, you know, with opens, you see this a lot where the strategy generally is to lay back and leave yourself longer irons because you're trying to flight stuff down. You try to run stuff in along the ground. And, you know, that type of game, he can still be pretty good at. So I think the conditions were really good for him. I think the course was really good for him. I think a lot of things set up well for him here. But, you know, I don't know. The problem I see with him is that driver is still so freaking shaky that, you know, if you go to a course where you got to use that a lot, I don't see him really getting it done. But, you know, look, could he win one of these Open Championships in the next couple of years? You know, after how he played this year, you got to say it's possible. But, you know, saying it's possible, and that doesn't mean it's going to happen. But, you know, he's doing a lot better than I think anyone. I'll admit this. I don't care. He's doing a lot better than I thought he would do. But the one thing that annoys me, though, it's that we keep hearing this stuff about how, oh, a year ago, I didn't know if I was ever going to play again. No, that's bullshit. You know, he came back like pretty far after, like he knew he was ready to go. He was playing money matches the entire summer with McIlroy, beating him some of the time, apparently. He's playing against Daniel Berger all the time and Justin Thomas all the time. So he's playing these high stakes money matches with some of the top guys in the world and he's beating them. He knew he was ready to go. So, you know, I don't want to hear one more time that, I didn't know I could play golf a year ago. Yes, you did. I mean, he's doing well, but, you know, let's not concede him wins, which the media tends to do all the time.
All right, fair enough. I think you've been very fair here with the with that, and I think it's important to, you know, when he is playing better. And you did say that you said that in a previous podcast, like you said that he'd been playing better, and I think he is playing better. I think the difference to me, you nailed this actually. Because you mentioned how his psyche is way different now since 2009. And in all the years, I think what I've noticed is that his mental toughness is more fragile than it was in the pre-Y.E. Yang days, let's say. Like, he does well in the beginning, and whether it's fatigue or whether it's just that mistake that unravels him, you always get that feeling that you can even see it in his face. Like, he gets a little nervous. And he's like, he just has to make sure he doesn't make that crucial mistake, because he feels like he knows that once he gets to that mistake, then it just goes all downhill for him. And unfortunately for him, that's what happened this time around. But he gets closer and closer each time too. So as to where the ceiling is from this point forward, I can't say either. But I do notice that difference. Like he used to think that, you know, if he was behind with not in the final round, but in the rounds before, if he was a little bit behind, he has the field right where he wants it. Here it's like he's doing well, but he's just kind of anticipating that big mistake that's gonna unravel him. And I guess in this case it happened again, but certainly more juice out of him in a major than we've seen in quite some time. So that's my final takeaway with Tiger. We can talk about the coverage and all that in a moment, but let's go back to John and get your takeaways from Tiger Woods' weekend. And what does it mean? Like, do you think he might have a chance at a major too, like down the road? What do you think, John?
Well, when I first heard the reports of this course last week that, you know, guys were hitting it with their driver 450 yards, that it was so fast and firm, and that the game plan would be irons mostly off the tee, I said, oh, well, this is definitely a course where Tiger can contend, because it's been well documented that his driver is very shaky, and he can still hit that, you know, that low, you know, piercing iron shot, like just 2-iron or 3-iron or whatever, that stinger shot, and he's still pretty good at that. So when I heard that, I mean, I knew he would do okay here. I didn't think he'd get to a point where, you know, he would have the lead on Sunday, like what happened. So you got to give him credit, and certainly, you know, it made for one of the most exciting tournaments in a long time. Just having him up there in contention, I will admit that. But again, it's just a theme of, you know, when he's gotten in contention over the last, you know, 2 months, you know, since he's come back, that you know, he will get in contention and then have, you know, one blow up hole or make a couple mistakes heading into the back nine, and for him to win one of these, he's got to overcome that hurdle, whatever it is, mentally, physically, whatever. He has to play the whole 72 holes and not just 60 or 62. And he just still hasn't mastered that yet, because, and like we've all said, I mean, these tournaments are hard to win, as, you know, a lot of these guys, like Molinari, might never win another major, and he could still have a great career, but we'll always remember him for winning, you know, the one open. You know, it's hard to win, and, you know, some Tiger fans would scoff at this, but the competition now is 100 times better than when he was dominating back in, you know, the late 90s and then whatever. You know, the depth of talent on the PGA Tour is just incredible, and you gotta bring it every single major to win and have your A game. And he has his A-minus game. You know, this is going to fall off just short. So, you know, going forward, I mean, am I going to say he's definitely going to win another major? I can't say that. Is it possible? Yeah, I mean, it's possible. He definitely showed you some things here. You know, the Open has been pretty good to the kind of older golfer at the end of their career, you know, playing strategic and picking up the major. And we saw that with Mickelson. We saw that, I mean, Darren Clark won a major, the Open. So, I mean, it's definitely possible. You know, they're going to Royal Portrush next year, which just looks like a beautiful course. I don't know anything about it other than, you know, how it looks on TV, and they last played an Open there like 50 or 60 years ago. So that'll be interesting. But I don't know, you know, what the strategy of the course is or anything else. So we'll, you know, that's yet to be determined. But, yeah, let's pump the brakes about Tiger being the favorite at Belle Reve, you know, next month for the PGA.
No, no way. No way.
Yeah, well, that's what you're hearing. Again, I don't know anything about that course either, so I'll have to do a little research. You need to hit driver on, you know, all the par fours and par fives. If that's the case, you know, probably rule him out, but we'll see. But I guess the other interesting thing to note is that because of this finish, Tiger just got into the World Golf Championships Bridgestone Invitational in 2 weeks at Firestone in Akron, and that's a course that he's absolutely dominated. He's won that 8 times over the course of his career. That was, in fact, his last win on the tour in 2013. So, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if he won that tournament and then everyone got all hyped up and then, you know, he doesn't do much at the PGA. That's happened a lot. Even when he was winning events, he'd win that tournament and everyone would go, oh, here's Tiger with the PGA, and then, you know, he wouldn't do that well. But it's just kind of ironic how he dominated that tournament, and then this is the last year that tournament is being played in Akron, Ohio, and he gets into it. So I guess that's kind of cool for that event. But just to get back on the main topic, definitely something to for the golf world to have him back. I mean, I think it's exciting to have him back in contention. I will say that, and you know, I'm not going to concede any majors to him, but you know, I'll give him a shot at winning another one before. You know, before he really, you know, hits that age where we just wouldn't expect it anymore.
Yeah. And, you know, it's pretty neat to see golfers who can still be effective into their 40s. Tiger is 42 as of this year. And it definitely is one of the unique traits of golf. Because, you know, there aren't a lot of sports where you can play into your 40s and still be good. Good enough to compete for championships. And Phil was in that category for a while. He was in this tournament briefly, but it didn't last very long. But I think he did make the cut, though, because I think I saw him early on Sunday, and so I guess he at least did that. But so that means we have reached the point for. Let's talk a little more about the course, because I think we were on that subject. So, Mike, let's get into some more course thoughts. I mean, you mentioned how wonderful it looked, and it provided provided some good challenges. And you know, like you said, you have to be sharp when you're at a place like Carnoustie, and many people were. And so it was a very fun watch for me, and the course really lived up to the billing for this tournament. So. Any additional course thoughts from you?
Yeah, I guess what you can say, if you're going to have a drawback on Carnoustie, I would say that there are other courses in the Rota that are definitely more aesthetically pleasing. I mean, I know Carnoustie's right near the coast, but there's no holes really that bring like the water or the sea into play. So you don't see that. So I guess that would be the knock on it, but you know, recently, I think in these last few years, we've seen a lot of these courses where unless the wind is whipping like crazy and they play in a monsoon, where they look a little bit obsolete to the modern game. I mean, the big thing with the Lynx courses is the first bounce is so firm that it, you know, it's very hard to like, let's say that you put the ball in the fairways are usually pretty generous, but if you put your ball in the wrong side of the fairway and then you have to go over a complex of bunkers to a pin, it's like you won't be able to hold the green. Like, that's the kind of the idea behind Lynx golf. It's like you got to put yourself in the correct positions so that you got a little space to work it into the green. And we've just been seeing that the guys now are so long and they hit the ball so high with so much spin that it doesn't matter. Like Royal Troon a couple of years ago where Stenson and Phil just went absolutely nuts. It's like that was supposed to be a tough course. The wind was up and they obliterated it. And it was nice to see Carnoustie. Now, I know it did play under par that one day for the first time ever, but you know, we have to give a little credit to the RNA here. They just kind of go, well, you know what? These are the courses we're going to go at, and the conditions are going to be what the conditions are. We're not going to try to manipulate it so much to try to get the score towards par or anything. You know, if the wind's up, yeah, it's going to be a bitch. If it's down, you know what? You're going to have a chance to score. And, you know, and if they have a drought, like they've had a drought, they're not going to be like watering the course like crazy, doing all this artificial stuff to try to get the rough up and to try to slow it down. They're just going to let it play how it's going to play. So to see a course where, now, granted, it was so firm that it was a little tough, but they did keep the greens reasonable so that, like, the greens weren't out of control. But to see the course really hold up without wind, I think was very promising. And I do got to say that, you know, they haven't been in Carnoustie for 11 years, and in my opinion, there is no reason they should ever go 11 years between opens at Carnoustie again, because it really, really was a great test for the modern game and the best players in the world.
Yeah, I think the reason they might have done it, this is just a guess, I'm a novice when it comes to following the sport, but maybe it's because it doesn't lend itself to really long distances compared to other courses. Maybe that was the reason. But
well, I guess one last comment on that, Vid. I don't think we'll be seeing that anymore, because it looks like for the time being that Trump Turnberry has been removed from the Rota. So more winning there from our fabulous president.
So that opens it up a little for some more chances for more winning. Did they just do it because of his name, or was there something else that went on that spawned that?
I just think they don't want the Open there while he's the president.
Yeah,
to be
makes
honest.
Sense. That makes sense to me. Sorry,
yeah,
guys.
There'd be a late entry. Yeah, there'd be a late entry. A guy from Russia, he'd be shooting 59 every round. And there'd be no way.
I know. Good point. All right, so John, let's get your course thoughts. Definitely a lot to cover there. So let's bring it to you for your thoughts.
Yeah, and there's not really much else to add. I mean, it is a beautiful course. I mean, if you look at the hole by hole, it's wonderful. It's a great test. I mean, I remember the first Open that I remember watching here in '99 was the whole Vandeveld disaster. I think that playoff between those three guys, the winner was like 6 over or 5 over or something. So that's like at the extreme you could play. I believe Garcia and Harrington were kind of similar to what Molinari finished at, like 8 under when they came back in 2007. It's a great test. And that was with even one day having just incredibly low scoring too. And it's still, they only finished at 8 under the winner. And it's a great test of the modern game. I would honestly, I agree with Mike. I would rather have them play at Carnoustie every 5 years than St. Andrews. I mean, St. Andrews is the home of golf. I get it, but it's a joke of a course if the wind doesn't blow. And they'll shoot 25 under on that course. The par fours are so short, and it's just the modern game has outplayed St. Andrews. Watch the seniors are playing their Open this week at St. Andrews. I bet they're going to shoot 20 under. So I would rather play it at a course like Carnoustie more often than in a course like St. Andrews. But I mean, that the RNA is going to give it to St. Andrews every 5 years. That seems to be the standard operating procedure. But maybe going forward, they're going to give it to kind of more, I'm going to say obscure courses, but more kind of out of the box, out of the rota courses like Royal Portrush next year, which you'd like to see. I mean, you get a kind of different links course every year. Which would be pretty cool. I just don't think anyone wants to see the Open that is, you love seeing the links golf. You just don't want to see a course being completely overmatched. I mean, you want it to have some challenge, even if the conditions are ideal. And certainly the conditions weren't 100% ideal here, but even so, I mean, it was still playing pretty difficult.
Cool. All right. Good stuff, fellas. Let's go into surprises and disappointments. And Mike, we'll start with you.
I guess I'll start with the disappointments here, and let's see. We got to go with the world number one, Dustin Johnson, who knows? I mean, that guy. He looked like a couple of years ago that he had gotten everything figured out and. That we were going to be seeing multiple majors out of him, but it just hasn't happened. And quick side note, I forget where I saw this, but I think it might have been on the board someone posted this, that the real reason that Dustin Johnson missed the Masters in 2016 wasn't that he fell down the stairs, was that he got caught fucking some guy's wife and the guy beat him up. Now, I said, I don't think that was the case because he showed up to the practice range the next day to try to warm up. So, but who knows? But, he kind of showed up to that and said, oh, I'm just going to hit driver on every tee. It's like, no, you can't do that. I know you're a great driver to golf ball, but that's never the strategy here. I mean, McIlroy can get away with it a little bit because he's a little bit more accurate with the driver than Dustin Johnson. But, sometimes you just got to dial it back a little bit. And, you'd figure that it would help him because you got to figure with a guy that big and that athletic, he's going to be able to hit his 3-wood further than anyone and his utility iron further than everyone. And you figure, he can take a little bit shorter of a club and still put it out there the same distance as guys. So you think he'd have an advantage, but just think not really a great game plan from him. The guy I want to mention is John Rahm because he just had a complete freaking meltdown on Friday. He's going along. He's 3 under par from the championship. He's in the top 10. And then on the
last, I think it was the last three holes of the front nine, so 7, 8, and 9, he goes triple bogey, bogey, and then double. It's like something you would see like at the country club at like 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon. And he just throwing clubs, screaming. I mean, you know, it looked like the guy had kind of figured out how to keep his temper a little bit in check at the Masters, but he's just been a disaster at the last two majors. So I am removing him from, you know, he had given me so many good results in FanDuel and fantasy golf, but I'll be removing him for the time being. Who else? Justin Thomas, a missed cut for him. That's you know, he hasn't really figured out Lynx golf yet, but I'd say that's disappointing. Those three players, especially Rom, because, you know, he was in really good shape and he just, he fell apart. Now, let me give you some surprises here. Just look at the leaderboard, because I forget the guy's name. He's a South African kid. Where is he? Eric Van Rooyen, who I have never, ever, ever heard of. I saw the name on a leaderboard. It was like, you know, the Jason Hirsch incident from Mike Francesa. But, yeah, he was in really good shape after the first two rounds. But, you know, he kind of tailed off, which, you know, you expect. You always see these in a major. You know, a guy that you never heard of kind of hangs around the first 2 days and inevitably trails off on the weekend. But good showing by him. He gets a 17th place finish. So nice job from that kid. Anyone else particularly? No, you know, like the top 20 is pretty much, you know, we got to give a shout out to Bernhard Langer at 59 years old, finishing, getting a top 25. Impressive job there by him. And the other, no, I mean, you look at the leaderboard here and pretty much, you know, all the guys are named guys. So not many surprises for me.
Yeah, I mean, we seem to, I think the last, in this year, we seem to be doing more disappointments than surprises, because even the guys that come, that you think come out of nowhere, they're actually pretty good golfers to begin with, so so that makes sense. All right, John, let's get your disappointments mostly, and then some surprises if you have any.
Yeah, I was going to mention those same three guys, especially Rom. It's like, I mean, you can't, you don't know what to expect from this guy, because he can be, his talent is just as good as anybody that plays golf, but just one bad hole and he just completely loses it. And you saw it again, and you just cannot pick him to win these majors, because you know there's going to be adversity at some point. And then he just can't handle it. So until he shows you that he can keep it together, you can't pick him at these majors. Dustin Johnson was a big disappointment, although I agree with Mike. He kind of went in this with the wrong strategy. I mean, he's clearly longer than anyone on tour. And I mean, I forget which analyst it was, but he even said that driver off all these holes, it's just not going to work, because you're going to be putting yourself in such bad angles, or, you know, going over bunkers, or you're going to be even in the rough, as you saw. I mean, that, you know, wasn't as thick as it could have been, but it's still pretty wispy and it can grab your club and send the ball, like, you know, in whatever direction. So just not really a great strategy from him in that point. So, that was disappointing. And Justin Thomas, too. I mean, he's been pretty solid all year. To see him with the missed cut was pretty surprising. In terms of disappointments, he was, a surprise and a disappointment for missing. So it was a surprising disappointment that he missed the cut, is what I'm trying to say with that. And I guess Sergio Garcia, too, since he was another disappointment, since he had that good history here. But his game has been horrible the last year and a half. I think I don't think he really gives a shit at this point. He just got married and he's got other priorities in his life, which is fine. But it's just his golf game is just not very good at the moment. Matsuyama as well has not been playing well. You know, but he's still a top talent and, you know, misses another cut here. Let's see here. Ricky Fowler again hyped him up into the, you know, all the media hyped him up. Oh, he's great at Lynx golf, blah blah blah. But once again, just a even par finish, tied for 28th. Really not going to get it done. I mean, he had his moments, but then, you know, like a lot of these guys, he just can't put it all together. In terms of surprises, yeah, that guy Van Rooyen was pretty surprising. Although I want to say he almost won some event recently on the European tour, and Russell Knox beat him. It wasn't the Scottish Open. It was the week before, and Russell Knox, I think, beat him in a playoff, or he was right up there. So, you know, definitely a good stretch of golf for him. Probably made enough money to get his card for next year. The other South African guy that was up there is Xander Lombard. Now, that is a guy that I literally had never heard of in my entire life. At least I had heard of Van Rooyen because, I saw his name on the leaderboard on the European Tour. But this guy, Lombard, never heard of him in my life. And he was 4-under through the first three rounds. And then he promptly shoots 82 on Sunday to finish almost dead last. I kind of feel bad for the guy. But that's what Carnoustie can do for you. But, other than that, I mean, the top 20 was pretty much, you know, all guys you could reasonably pick before the week to say, okay, if you told me that this guy was going to be in the top 20, would you be surprised? And outside of Van Rooyen, I mean, maybe Pat Perez, just because Lynx golf doesn't really seem like it would suit him much of any, but, you know, he got a top 20. So, yeah, there you go. It was a pretty good leaderboard, and, you know, that proved itself out in the excitement in the final round.
Yep, a pretty deep field, isn't it? That bore itself out throughout the entirety of the tournament. So it's good to see, because as I mentioned at the top, I did not want this tournament to be an ongoing duel between Kisner and Zach Johnson. That would have just been really boring. So thankfully, it didn't come to that. Mike, let's now chat a bit about the coverage. It was weird. Yeah, it was weird. I don't know why it was so much weirder this year than last year. I thought the coverage was fine last year, but this year it just seemed off. I will give credit to NBC to Golf Channel for bringing in Nick Faldo for the early rounds, which were on Golf Channel. Those are exclusive to Golf Channel. That was cool. After that, I don't know. I mean, it's just kind of strange. And I think I'll let you expound on the details, but the commercial cutaways were awkwardly timed. I don't know. It was just something felt off about it this year. I can't really say what, but I didn't see Jimmy Roberts at all. I don't know if he was there or not, but I just don't remember. So, Mike, your thoughts on television coverage this year from NBC and Golf Channel?
Yeah, I noticed that I tweeted about this, that they went to like the playthrough commercial during like a really I forget when it was exactly now, and I should have taken a note of it, but they went to one of the commercial cutaways where, yeah, granted, it's a half screen, but it's not very big. It's not very clear. When Tiger Woods is hitting like a critical shot, and it's just like, what the hell are you guys doing? I mean, you know, someone got fired for that, going to commercial when Tiger Woods is up. So, yeah, that would be my chief complaint there, was that, you know, they showed so much coverage. I mean, really, it's incredible that they show basically the whole tournament. But, you know, you can't be having this many commercials during, like, during the final stretch. I mean, come on. You got to be a little bit better than that. Other topics to go over with the coverage. This very well could have been Johnny Miller's last call on a major. So that is, you know, I'll miss him. You know, the guy could be a blowhard at times, but, you know, because of his stature in the game, and you got to figure, you know, him and Greg Norman both finished with two majors, but, I mean, they're amongst the more talented golfers really ever to play. I mean, Johnny Miller at his best was probably maybe the best iron player ever. I mean, the guy was so accurate that apparently he wouldn't even hit to exact yardages. He'd be like, well, I want to hit this to, you know, 153 and one half yard, and that's how good he was. And, you know, I remember I asked my dad, I'm like, what actually happened to him? And apparently, one year he bought he's a Mormon, got a lot of kids, so he buys a ranch out in Utah, and he like spends the whole off season chopping wood, right? So he comes back to the tour the next year, and he's like all muscle bound, and you know, Johnny Miller actually himself mentioned this, that he thinks this is true. He lost his flexibility, and his swing was never, it took him a while really to get it back, and by the time he got it back, his putting betrayed him. So you know, only two majors for Johnny Miller, but one of the more talented golfers of all time. You know, he was considered the next Jack Nicklaus, and he didn't live up to it, but, you know, at his peak, you know, he could go toe-to-toe with anyone that ever played. So that's why he could speak his mind, and he didn't fear any repercussions. He's like, you know, I'm Johnny Miller. What the fuck are you going to say to me? So that was always good that, you know, he could do that. Because you definitely see so many types of the media that are afraid of pissing off players, are afraid of rubbing people the wrong way. And Johnny Miller just said what he thought was true. And it wasn't always the most articulate or the best thought out stuff, but, you know, at least he said what was on his mind. So we'll miss him if he's gone. I got to say, you know, I have really soured on Dan Hicks. I mean, the more I pay attention to him, he has no clue what's going on. He doesn't follow golf that closely. The guy, like, before the frickin' Tiger even tees off, he starts talking about, oh, well, if Tiger won, this would be one of the greatest stories. You know, why don't you let it fucking happen before you start talking about it? I don't want to hear about this shit anymore. I mean, the guy is constantly kissing Tiger's ass, constantly talking about, like, oh, you know, Tiger did this back in this day, you know, and that's all he does. And, you know, what really made it look bad was over the first 2 days of the coverage, you saw, and this combination was great. You had Tirico out there with Faldo as the lead color guy, and then Faraday out on the course. And those three had a great rapport. And Tirico, you know, a few weeks ago at the Travelers Championship, I actually saw that Golf Channel on Thursday had him out doing the lead play-by-play. So, you know, hopefully we see more of that because Tirico follows golf pretty closely. He knows what's going on. And I always said that that's what really sets Nance apart is that if you ask Nance, hey, you know, so-and-so is out, we need you to do color commentary, he could do it as well as do the play-by-play. I think Tirico follows golf closely enough that he could do the color commentary if he needed to. Nance, I mean, Hicks does not. He's basically like Joe Buck at this point. It's just canned lines and just not really paying attention to what's going on. But, you know, I found out something very interesting about Joe Buck, and I know I'm getting off coverage. I mean, off topic. He's like a scratch handicap, but he doesn't follow golf that closely. So that's a little weird. But, you got to give kudos for just the amount of coverage. But, you know, they got to figure something out with this commercial thing. You know, if they want to do the playthrough commercials, maybe make the screen a little bit bigger. And maybe they can find a way to get, you know, reduce Hicks's role maybe. And, I don't know, maybe get Tirico in as a lead play-by-play guy. Because, you know, I think when if Miller leaves, they might shake things up. And, you know, that would be the first thing they do. It's like, well, if Miller's gone, we'll let Hicks go and we'll bring in Tirico. And then I don't know who they'd bring in, but, yeah, you know, they'll find someone.
Now tell me a story about the Miller bunker, because I'm sure that's connected to Johnny Miller, yes?
Yeah, it's one of the bunkers on 18 off to the right. In 1975, he's in contention. He's a stroke behind, so he's got to make birdie on 18. And he hits the ball into a bunker on the right side, and he tries to hit a 6-iron over the lip. And it hits the lip and comes back into the bunker. So that's why it's the Johnny Miller bunker.
I've seen that happen before, though. I don't know if I remember it happening on that hole during the Open this year, but I have seen that happen. That's pretty funny. I thought somebody did that earlier in the weekend. I just can't remember who. But it was pretty embarrassing. Anyway, good stuff there. Mike, let's go to John. Let's get your thoughts on the NBC and Golf Channel coverage.
Yeah, I mean, the amount of coverage, I mean, that's just unbelievable. So that was just a great job by them when they picked up the Open after, you know, losing the U.S. Open to grab this championship. And they've definitely stepped up their game with the amount of coverage. And obviously owning the Golf Channel certainly helps that they can flop all that early coverage there. I mean, I didn't get to watch, you know, a lot of the early coverage, but, you know, waking up at 6 or 7 o'clock on Thursday and Friday and putting it on for a little bit, I mean, it was just tremendous. But yeah, I think Johnny Miller's last Open, and you know, he I think Mike said it correctly. He wasn't always the most articulate, but he definitely, you know, had his opinions, and he wasn't afraid to say them. And for that, you gotta love the guy in terms of a broadcaster. It'll be interesting to see who they replace him with. I don't know if, obviously, it's not 100% sure that he's not coming back next year. But, you know, if they were to look, like, on their current team, I would say either Gary Koch does a pretty good job. I mean, I guess you could say he's a little boring, if anything. I mean, he's like just like a solid, you know, stock kind of broadcaster. But he's definitely knowledgeable about golf. I don't know if he would kind of have that flashy kind of opinions that Miller had. But he's definitely solid. I wouldn't be upset if they promoted him. Or even David Faraday. I mean, he you know, he could do the course reporter, as we've seen, you know, through the years of CBS and in the calling shots in the tower. I think he could be a good lead analyst. Especially since he has his show on the Golf Channel, I think that would make sense to promote him. I swear, if they promote Peter Jacobson, I will not watch any tournament on NBC ever again. He's a complete clown. I can't stand him. I don't even know why they have him there. He's a joke. And it was funny on Sunday. It was like 10 minutes before the last group teed off, and Johnny Miller wasn't even in the booth. I think it was they had Justin Leonard up there, and he did okay, but it's just like, all right, well, kind of waiting for Johnny Miller here to come in the last group. Like, what's going on here? But eventually, obviously, he had a short window compared to those other guys, but that was pretty funny. I mean, other than that, I mean, nothing really controversial or whatever to say. I mean, Hicks, yeah, I kind of get that sense, too. It's just getting a little worse year after year, but NBC seems to like him, so we'll just, you know, they're going to stick with him. Unless they kind of do the whole entire overhaul, like Mike was talking about. Like, if Miller doesn't return, so they'll be like, all right, well, that's a good reason to shake up the whole booth. So maybe they'll go with the Tirico-Faraday combination or whatever. So that would work out pretty well, I think. In terms of the guys that they have on their roster. I don't know what, you know, you or Mike would think about that potential pairing.
I think using Tirico in a play-by-play role is really solid. I mean, he used to do it for ABC when they did the Open. So I think it's a smart play. He's a big golf guy. Like Mike's right. He's really good with the golf. I just think logically it makes more sense. Hicks has got a lot on his plate lately. You know, he used to do less stuff. Now he does way more stuff. He just does the Notre Dame. He does the Olympic stuff and all sorts of crap. I mean, so he's busy. And Mike, just out of a sidebar note, do you think that he's as good with the Do you think he's just as inept with the football coverage as he is with the golf?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, he just seems to be like one of those stock announcers. They like the tone of his voice, but you know, I just wanted to say, in terms of who would replace Johnny Miller, I can't think of an obvious candidate. I mean, yeah, they might do Faraday, but I think Faraday might be a little bit too quirky to do it. Gary Koch, I don't think he's a big enough profile. So I'm like wondering who would they possibly, like, it's kind of like, okay, who out there is a big enough name? Because usually they try to bring in somewhat of a high-profile player to do this, and I can't think of any obvious ones off the top of my head. I mean, they might bring in someone new who hasn't really done this before if Miller leaves. So, I don't know. That's an interesting question. You know, and the other thing I'd be worried about is, you know, I could almost see them, like, going to Azinger and being like, listen, do you want to do more than one tournament a year? And bringing him in, which would not be a good move, but I could almost see it happening.
Man. Well, you have to remember, too, that NBC also has all the tournaments in the springtime, so it wouldn't be just a one-time deal. They'd have to bring him in for the Southern Florida Swing. While you were talking, I actually just thought of somebody that kind of affiliated with Golf Channel NBC. What if they brought Brandel Chamblee in to be, like, the lead analyst?
Be an interesting one. You know, the problem might be is that, like, if they bring him up, the players would refuse to speak to him. So,
right.
Apparently they all hate him. But, yeah, no, it's an interesting question. I can't think of an obvious candidate right here.
That'll be a good one to follow in the next year or so. I guess I'll just throw in a few quick hitters on Johnny Miller. I did think he was refreshingly honest, but we both agree, like all three of us agreed that he seemed like he was just done. Like he was kind of mentally checked out. But this tournament, I thought he was pretty engaged. I thought he did a pretty good job overall. I'm not sure if you guys agree, but if that's his last one, I think he went out on a high note despite the moment where he wasn't there. I didn't catch that, but that was funny. So I guess that's it. I wasn't sure if you guys felt the same as far as John. I mean, what'd you think about Miller this time around, Mike, overall? Did you think that he was pretty engaged as well?
Yeah, he seemed into it. You can tell that he's clearly got a lot of memories of the place, you know, coming so close but coming up short. But, yeah, he won the next year. So I think that, you know, if that hadn't have happened, we probably would have seen, like, the bitter Johnny Miller, like when Thomas broke his record at the U.S. Open. He's like, well, and then he makes the comment like the next day, well, you know, folks, it was a lot harder to shoot 63 in 1973 at Oakmont than it was to shoot 62 at this place. So, like, we didn't see, like, the pissed off, like, you know, fuck this shit, Johnny Miller. So, yeah, he probably realized that, hey, this is the last one for me. But, you know, who knows? Like, because apparently he wasn't going to come back this year. And then NBC threw him a bunch of money and said, listen, you don't have to do full time. You know, you won't do every tournament, but just come back. We want you back for some of these tournaments. And, you know, he said, okay. So, you know, who knows? He might say, I'm done with this. I want to spend all my time fishing or whatever. Hanging out in Florida with Jack Nicklaus. Apparently they hang out all the time and all they do is fish. So, but, you know, who knows? And there was no, like, ceremonial thing being like, oh, this is Johnny's last major. So who knows? You know, I'm sure if they write him a big enough check, he'll come back.
Okay. Well, we'll
maybe
find.
Maybe not, though. Who knows?
Yeah. I mean, NBC has so many decisions to make right now. I mean, they haven't figured out. They wanted to get Tirico for the Thursday night football scenario, and that didn't work out for a little bit. And then they finally got it done. And now they don't even have it. They went to Fox. And they've got to figure out what to do as far as the NFL coverage, because at some point Al Michaels will retire too. I don't know when. I mean, you got to think it's sooner rather than later. Checker would have a better idea. But, you know, I think Tirico is a really talented guy, and I feel like he gets underutilized on the whole network. So I'm curious about what will happen from here on out. In fact, actually, let's take that step further. Is Tirico now doing Notre Dame games? Because now I seem to remember that he took over for that last year. Does anyone know? I can't remember. I thought he did.
Yeah, I think he is. I remember, yeah, I think he's doing Notre Dame, and then he's doing, like, those select – he was doing those select, like, a couple Thursday night games and then, like, those Saturday – the weird Saturday games. But I guess since NBC, you know, doesn't have the package anymore, he wouldn't be – those, but I'm pretty sure he's doing the Notre Dame football, but he would probably be the logical replacement for Al Michaels, no?
Oh, I agree. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
can I ask you guys an off-topic question?
Mm-hmm.
How do you see Notre Dame-Michigan week one going? Just a quick, I don't want you to do a whole preview. I know you got it coming up, but any quick feelers there?
John?
I saw that Notre Dame was 3-point underdogs, and I'll take that all day at home. I think, you know, Michigan, they're breaking in a new quarterback. I know he's pretty talented from Ole Miss, Shea Patterson, but I saw a stat that when Michigan is playing a top 10 team on the road, they're like 0-16 over the last I don't know how many years. So I like the Irish in that one.
Yeah, I think they're a lot.
Right, well,
go ahead.
No, go ahead, Vid.
I didn't know if you wanted my opinion, but I thought they were a live dog, too. I think this will be interesting. Michigan still has some uncertainty as they start a new year. I mean, John pretty much nailed it. You know, they have a new quarterback coming in, and not only that, but there's some other turnover in other positions. I think Michigan will be better, but going on the road to Notre Dame to start the year, that's tough. I think that'll be an interesting game.
Yeah, I hope so. You know, it seems like the last few years, Notre Dame, they seem to come out pretty strong. Like, you know, they gave Georgia a hell of a test, and then, you know, they kind of faded as the year went on. But, you know, hopefully, because, you know, that was always a big rivalry game, and then it got canceled, and then there's the whole thing of who canceled it and whose fault it was. So, be a little extra juice for Notre Dame, Michigan this year. And you know I'm going to be paying a lot of attention to your football picks because now I can just take a quick 10-minute drive over the Meadowlands and legally wager on these games.
Yeah.
So it'll be a fun college football year coming up.
All right.
No pressure. No pressure, Dave. You got to give us some good picks this year, I guess.
Well, we'll have some easy choices coming up because anytime you see an Arizona State game.
Exactly.
Or Tennessee, somebody like that. We'll have some pretty good choices in those scenarios. So, all right. So let's see what's coming up on the tour, Mike. Let's get your look at the road ahead leading up to the PGA Championship, the weekend of August the 12th at the Bellerive Golf Course, which is in a suburb of St. Louis. I can't even speculate how hot that would be. That has got to be muggy as fuck, but it must be. But tell us a little bit more about what's coming up.
Okay, so we got the Canadian Open this week at it's at Glen Abbey. Yeah, no, it moves next year, I think. Jack Nicklaus course outside of Toronto. So always a very interesting finish there. You know, the 18th hole is pretty tough. They got water in the mix, so. Usually an exciting finish there at the Canadian Open. Then, of course, we have the last ever, well, who knows, maybe it'll come back, but so far as scheduled, the last ever WGC Bridgestone Invitational at Firestone Country Club. And, you know, Firestone, look, I look at it and I can tell, you know, if you went and played this, yeah, it's a good course, and yeah, it's definitely a good test, but it just comes off terribly on TV. Like, you look at how it's laid out, and it's like every hole is, like, straight up and down, and there's trees on every hole. It comes off so poorly aesthetically on TV. So I can't say I'm going to particularly miss it. And it is fitting that Tiger Woods managed to sneak into the top 50 in the world to get in this tournament. So, yeah, so we'll have that WGC coming up. You know, John's right. He'll probably win it like he did in 2013, and then you'll have all the panelists be like, oh, well, I wonder, like, what's his name? Charlie Reimer did. Oh, you know, it's not a matter of who's going to win the PGA Championship. It's a matter of by how many. So yeah, we'll get ready for that nonsense. The thing is, even if Tiger, like, contends or plays well, they're just going to give you this bullshit about how, oh, you know, he's going to win this tournament now. Because especially, I think Firestone is a Robert Trent Jones course. And Bellerive is a Robert Trent Jones course. So you know that they're going to, like, be coming up with all the like the parallels and comparisons. Oh, well, if Tiger does well here, he's going to do great at this course. And, yeah, I did a quick little run through unfortunately, the PGA thing. It takes them forever to update, like, their app, like, for the tournament. So they don't have, like, the whole stuff up on the PGA app, at least the last time I checked, which was yesterday. But I went on the Bellerive Country Club website, and, you know, it looks like it's a very nice course. Like I said, Robert Trent Jones design, who's considered, like, now, granted, this period of golf course architecture from, like, the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, like, now is considered kind of, like, blah by standards. Like, the stuff older is considered better, and the stuff, like, newer, like the Pete Dyes, the Fazios of the world, that stuff is considered better courses. But, you know, it does look like a nice course. It's got some of the largest greens, apparently, you're going to see in a major championship. And then I saw that it's going to play like 7,300, close to 7,400 yards, but it's only a par 70. So who knows? Should be a tough test. But, you know, the PGA, it's hard to say how the PGA is going to play. It's like last year, it was almost like a U.S. Open. But then the year
Well, the year before was at a Baltusrol, which was a tough test, but not super tough. But, you know, the PGA is very much, the setup varies from year to year. So, I don't know, you'll probably see a 10 to 15 underscore win, I would think. But, I don't know, not much history. Well, no, there is history at this course. It's where Gary Player completed the career Grand Slam and became the first international person to do so. So, but yeah, definitely an unknown course coming up here. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays.
First international player, and that was like in the 70s. I'm kind of surprised it took that long. Because, you know, there have been a lot of
players. It was in like 19, Dave, I think it was in 1968, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, it was definitely the 60s.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Well, still seems pretty late in the game, but not as late as I thought. Okay. Good times. Okay, yeah, that's pretty awesome. So it sounds like the course will be fun to, at least it'll be a fun watch. I'll learn a lot about it as we start watching the tournament in earnest, so it should be good. And the coverage goes back to CBS, so that'll be a welcome change. But overall, I think TV coverage just in general has been all right. So let's go to John and get your thoughts on the road ahead and the tour and the PGA to come.
Yeah, short little break here before we get our next major, which is good. Yeah, the Canadian Open's always an exciting finish on that course. I read that it's being actually torn down to build like a condos or whatever. So this will be the last Canadian Open at Glen Abbey, and of course the tournament moves to some other course next year. I don't know which one, but the more, I guess, important news about that event is the switch to the schedule, which the PGA Tour finally announced the 2018-2019 schedule, and it's got a ton of changes. We have new tournaments in Detroit and in Minnesota to kind of create like a three-week Midwest swing in addition to the John Deere Classic. That'll be right after the U.S. Open. The Travelers Championship has the same spot right after the U.S. Open. Then you have that three-week swing through the Midwest. You have the Players Championship moving back to March. The PGA, this will be the last PGA Championship in August. The PGA will move to May, and then the FedEx Cup has been moved up to August and is now gone from four tournaments to three. So they got rid of the tournament in Boston, and now the first tournament in the FedEx Cup will be rotated between New York and Boston. So now the entire golf season will be done like before August 30th, which we've been talking about for years on this show. So the suits at the tour must have been listening because – you know, it is going to shake it up a little bit, but I think for the game of golf, I think it'll be more excitement for the end of the year, and especially the FedEx Cup than there is now. So, you know, we can definitely discuss that more at another point, but I guess getting back to upcoming schedule, yeah, the Canadian Open, then you have the Bridgestone, which I had mentioned before, and also that week is like an opposite field event because the Bridgestone is only like 70 players and, you know, only some of the top 50 in the world. And there's like some international qualifiers and whatever, but the main tour, like guys fighting for their cards, will be at the Reno Tahoe event. And you know, you kind of laugh at it, but this is the one tournament a year that has the Stableford scoring, where if you look at the leaderboard, like guys are plus, like they get points for birdies and eagles and whatever. And it's actually pretty exciting. And what I like about it, it's played obviously in Reno Tahoe, so it's like late night coverage. So after you watch the Bridgestone, like you want to watch a little more golf. They'll be on from like 7 to 9 live on board, which is pretty neat. So I always kind of like tuning in to that event. And then obviously the PGA, and I'm on Bell Reeve's site right now, website. Mike inspired me to look this up, and the course does look beautiful. So I think they might have played a FedEx Cup event here a couple of years ago, the BMW Championship. I could be wrong about that. I might be thinking of another course, but I'll have to check on that. But it definitely looks gorgeous, so we'll have to – definitely do a little more research and you know, see how it's going to play before the PGA comes up here in a couple weeks.
Yeah, and in a couple weeks we'll be looking at our last August PGA Championship for quite a while. As you mentioned, it'll move to May next year, and the Players moves to March also next year. So that change we talked about last year is coming in the next year, if that makes any sense. And it'll be an adjustment, but we'll savor this one for now. So now let's dig in any other potpourri, other thoughts, anything else you want to talk about regarding the game. Why are people still using anchored putters? I mean, I still saw Adam Scott struggling and trying to use that putter again, but I don't know what that's about. But anyway, Mike, anything on your mind regarding the game of golf?
Yeah, good point by John there about the Reno Tahoe thing. Because, you know, I tend to find myself, maybe not so much on the weekends, but on Thursday and Friday, I always find myself watching that. And, you know, with the Stableford scoring format, and, you know, I just think the course is very interesting, too, because it's up in the mountains. It's a Jack Nicklaus design. There are just obviously huge elevation changes. And, you know, I just always find it to be an interesting event to watch. And, you know, it's good aesthetically. So, you know, yeah, I always find myself watching that, too. It's a good event, you know, despite being an opposite field event. So I would definitely give my endorsement to tune into that one as well. And yeah, I guess I gotta say, you know, I know we'll definitely talk about this after the PGA, but personally, I'm gonna miss the PGA being in August, because, you know, the more I think about this, I'm just like, you know, look at all the stuff we have going on in May. We have the NBA playoffs, we have the NHL playoffs, baseball has started, you know, you got the Triple Crown going on. You know, and really right now, what's going on? I mean, we got baseball, obviously, but, you know, right now it's like you're kind of twiddling your thumbs waiting for week one of college football and then week one of the NFL. So, you know, I always thought it was good to kind of have, look, I understand why they did it. They want to, like, get themselves to a better date on the calendar, but, you know, what's going to be pretty interesting is that I was looking at the upcoming PGA, locations, and they have a thing that before 2030 they have to have it at Southern Hills in Tulsa, Oklahoma. You're really going to have the PGA Championship in the heart of Tornado Alley at the height of tornado season? that could be a disaster of unmatched proportions there. But yeah, I'm not saying that a tornado is going to hit, but you get severe thunderstorms and stuff. So who knows? But I guess one other thing to touch on is, you know, just looking forward to next year. I mean, the major championship venues, Augusta, obviously, and then the PGA Championship is going to be at Bethpage Black, which is just an unbelievable course. You know, I went to when they had the Barclays at it's now the Northern Trust at Bethpage Black. It's just such a stunning course. And the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, which is going to be amazing, obviously. And then the Open Championship at Royal Portrush, which if you want a, I know they redid a couple holes there, but Rory McIlroy, as a 15-year-old, shot a 61 and holds the course record. So might want to take out a futures bet on him for next year. So, yeah, just, you know, good stretch of golf coming up here. And then definitely be a little nostalgia this year watching the PGA, knowing it's going to be the last one in August for quite a while.
Yeah, you made some great points about how the scheduling, at least for that event specifically, works better in August. So, yeah, I'm going to definitely wax nostalgic as the years go by. All right, John, any potpourri, any other ideas that you wanted to bring to the table?
Yeah, I just did a quick Google search here, and they did play the BMW Championship once at Belle Reve way back in 2008. I still think this tournament was called the Western Open at the time. I could be wrong, but it was won by Camilo Villegas. There's a name you haven't heard from in a while, at 15 under. So assuming it's kind of set up the same, maybe a little bit harder, figure maybe around a 10 to 12 under score. So have to look back on that week and see the kind of guys that were in contention before the PGA starts in a couple of weeks to kind of get a good idea on who and what kind of player might contend. But yeah, it is going to be kind of bittersweet with the PGA moving to August. It's just kind of one of those things, like, just growing up, like, going on August vacation, like, the PGA would always kind of be there, and it just kind of signified, like, the end of the summer or whatever. Just, I don't know. It's going to be kind of, you know, nostalgic just to kind of see it move, and it definitely will be kind of bittersweet. I also think one of the upcoming venues is Oak Hill, which, if you don't know, is in Rochester, New York, almost in Canada. So if you imagine, like, early May, like, I don't – will the course even be ready? Like, they still be plowing snow in early May in Rochester. I don't know. We'll have to see about that. But, yeah, so we'll have a tornado 1 year, and then we'll have snow the next year for the PGA. That'll be interesting. But, yeah, overall, it's an exciting time for golf. I would not be remiss if I didn't mention on the show that I made my first ever eagle playing golf last week. So that was pretty exciting. I hate to be a humble brag, but I don't know if I will get one again in my life. So that was pretty cool.
Kudos, John. That was awesome.
Hey, congrats on that. Good job.
Yep, thank you. And I do a golf league, and I it was part of one of my best nines ever. I shot even par, and it was a par 34. So it was a 34, so like my lowest ever gross like number score, which was pretty awesome. And yet I was playing someone who sandbagged their handicap so bad I could only tie him. So I guess that's golf for you. You can't you win, but you can't you know, you do well, but you can't win. So that's why we love the game.
Yeah, I'll give you a quick note on that. I've been playing at my boss. He's a member at this place called White Beaches Country Club. And, like, I'm going through the locker room there, and I noticed that on their club championship match play that, like, the top eight seeds all, like, lost, and they got, like, 64 guys in this. So it's like the one seed loses 5-4 in the club championship match play to the 64. I'm like, wait, how the hell is that possible? And I just go to my boss named Paul. I'm like, Paul, they sandbag here. He's like, oh, you got no fucking idea how bad it is. So, I mean, it just, who knows? Like, if someone did that to me, I'd seriously like break their clubs. It's like, what are you doing? I mean, come on.
Sandbagging is the worst. I mean, seriously, even when I was doing the master swimming back in the day, I mean, and when, you know, like, man, about 7 years ago or whatever, you get these people that put in like, oh, yeah, I'm going to seed myself as like a 10-minute swimmer. And it's like, you're not 10-minute swimmer. Bullshit. And then they start blowing by everybody in the race. And it's like, what is this? Like, it's definitely the worst. Okay, I guess that's it. Final thoughts time. I thought that was some good coverage tonight, guys. Mike, final thoughts from you?
I guess just one last thing to touch on. You know, I was a little surprised when they released the new schedule that it's going to be a rotation now between the New York Metro and Boston, especially considering that they do a rotation of courses down here. But, you know, I've thought about it, and I guess the reason is, you know, the courses they go to around here are considered to be, like, very prestigious. Like, even if you have the money, you can't necessarily get into them. So, at places like that, like, I know Ridgewood, which is going to have the Northern Trust this year. In the late 80s and 90s, it was considered for a U.S. Open site, and the members were like, no, we don't want it because it would require them closing the course down for too long. So that's like the type of blue bloods you're dealing with. So I guess that had something to do with it. And that, and there are like a lot of major championships scheduled for around here in like the next 5 years. Which, unfortunately, one of them is at Trump Bedminster. So, yeah, that should be. I think the 2022 PGA is at Trump Bedminster. So that should be a circus. But I know, you know, one of the reasons I decided, you know, at the last minute, I'm like, yeah, you know what, I'm not going to go to the U.S. Open this year was that not next year, but 2020, it's at Wingfoot, which is like, I don't know, 45 minutes from me. So much better than a two-hour drive out to Shinnecock.
Okay. Final thoughts for you, John?
Yeah, no, I think we've covered a lot in terms of tournament and everything else going on in the world of golf. And it's just, we're winding down and, you know, looking forward to the next month and PGA, and before we know it, we'll be diving into the football podcast. So it's definitely an exciting time of year. So glad to be a part of it, Dave.
Oh, it's going to be fun. I think the next couple of months are going to be really exciting. And I think this is a good time for us on the show. probably going to be for the next maybe 2 to 3 weeks. We'll probably be dormant on the pod. So, but after that, it's going to get pretty intense. So, guys, it's been a lot of fun. Have a great week. Enjoy the summer. It's not that. Is it getting pretty crazy hot over there where you guys are? Is it like super hot or is it just like regular hot? Is it just kind of hot?
Well, we had one week like during the July 4th week. It was like 95 with 70% humidity for a week straight, which is just ridiculous.
Wow.
And now it's just been raining every day for like the last how many ever days. It's been pretty wild, but hey, it's summer. I'd rather have this than 20 inches of snow. I'll take this every day of the week.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, well, guys, a lot of fun. Mike, my best to you. Same to you, John. And we'll do it again soon. So in a couple weeks. Guys, take care. And good luck with your golf, too. Hopefully another eagle for both of you guys.
All right, thanks.
All right, take care, guys.
All right, fellas. That's John, that's Mike, and this is Dave. I hope you enjoyed this program tonight. Good times with the golf. Take care of yourselves, everybody. Just a second while I fix the audio. There we go. We'll be back at some indeterminate time, but when we come back, probably we'll be back for the PGA Championship recap. So I send my best to all you guys. Thanks for listening. We're at DitCal on Twitter or www.dicow on the web. We'll see you next time.